It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future.
Well, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. It is the spring, and it feels like spring. If you're in the southeast or along the... Well, if you're in the southeast, you know that it's windy and it's warm-ish and allergies at an all-time high, well, at least for this year. So, good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. Today, I mean, there's just so many things to talk about. There's never-ending content for Money Matters here. So many good articles to talk about. So many circumstances that are just kind of just fascinating that... We're in a period of time of such political volatility because of the year we've just gone through, and quite frankly, we're still living through. And it creates, through the pandemic and the health crisis and the economic crisis and then the political churn, it creates policy. It creates just massive political churn. And we're just at the beginning of that with a brand new $1.9 trillion stimulus plan. And we've talked about stimulus for the last couple of weeks. And it's still very difficult for, I think, anybody, and me including, to just understand just how impactful $1.9 trillion is. I mean, we keep hearing that. You see news, $1.9 trillion. I wanted to today break that down into the family level. So what does it really mean for a family? What part of the 1.9 trillion? Just throw that number out for a minute. It doesn't mean anything to anybody individually. What does it mean to you individually? And then what does it mean to, because of what it means individually, how does that impact the economy? And then how does that economic impact roll back to the very vehicle that so many of us are utilizing, the stock market, the bond market, to try to get to an early dignified retirement? How do we understand the economics of today that translates back to the market of today? Does that help us on our path to get to early retirement, early economic freedom, or just on time or anytime? Or does it hurt us? And do we have to steer around something? Or do we just need to understand this fascinating time in economic history and what it really means? Because as a student of economics and a student of the markets, and quite frankly, just so fascinated by all of this past year, it is a topic that I think we can all dive into and understand, because in the end, it's just one of the most interesting times in economic history. Also, let's try to figure out, I always want some sort of historical analog to understand, is this like the Depression? Is this like World War I or World War II? Is this like the 1950s? Where are we in all of this? And I think we do have a good analog for where we are today. And that would be as we emerged from World War II. A lot of the same. So we went through, at the time of World War II, we lost an enormous amount of human life and human sacrifice. And when the war was over, we were in a period of time where we had this great deficit spending, lots of debt in the United States. And then we had to kind of get back to a more normal life. And then what did the markets do? What did the world do? And where were interest rates? And if you start to line up, what did interest rates look like then? What was the Fed doing then? What was the deficit like then? It's very interesting to see so many of those numbers line up almost exactly how they are today. So that we do have this historical precedent to go back and say, well, of course it wasn't the same at all because it was a war then. Today we're getting out of a pandemic now, but the starting line after the crisis looks actually very similar. If you look at the economic numbers of the day then versus the economic numbers of the day today, where do we go from here? What does that typically mean for markets? Well, the good news is as we emerge from World War II, again, we'll go through some of the analogs of interest rates almost identical to today. The Federal Reserve then basically pegged rates, short-term rates at pretty much zero, not exactly zero, but extremely low. Call it less than 1%. Well, that sounds exactly what's happening today. They also essentially managed interest rates on the long end of the long-term interest rates very low as well. So if you looked at the yield curve, which is pretty just a pretty much a fancy way of saying what a short-term and intermediate-term and long-term government interest rates look like then, looks a lot like where we are today. And the management of the Federal Reserve today versus then, very similar, also with an economy coming out of a difficult, very difficult period of time, enormous loss of human life, and enormous deficit spending. What happened to markets? Well, the punchline is that the equity markets actually did very well. If you go back and look at what markets did in the late 1940s and the early 1950s, the stock market itself, the S&P 500, did very, very well, actually. And we'll go into some of those numbers here in the next hour or two. But let's talk about where we are today. So we have this 1.9 trillion economic. We may actually want to call this a, of course, it's an incentive or stimulus plan. But the more I look at this and the more evidence I see, that it may be also a disincentive plan. There was a report yesterday out of Pittsburgh, and this is a report that I've seen over and over again in not just Pittsburgh, but here in Atlanta and in Dallas and in Denver and in Sacramento, all over the country. The headlines are pretty similar when it comes to small business owners. Small business owners cannot find enough workers. They cannot hire enough people to fill the jobs that they need. That goes to places like restaurants. Well, wait a minute. Restaurants are opening up today. Well, yes, they are opening up. They're getting busy. And what's happening? Well, guess what? Restaurant owners can't find cooks and servers. There's just not enough people to apply for the open jobs. Security companies can't find enough folks in the security industry. Car dealerships can't find enough people to help sell and service cars. Has anyone tried to get an Uber lately? And I live in Midtown Atlanta. I live right near the High Museum, right near WSB Radio. The W Hotel is not too far away. And I've got to be, and I had to go to the airport this week. I left at 6:45 a.m. Typically, I got to be really careful about pushing the Uber button because there are Ubers right around the corner. It have been for years now, for the better half a decade or five plus years, Uber's been just right around the corner. I hit go on the Uber app, and an Uber shows up in 30 seconds. So I got to be really careful about the Uber app because they're just there. So I don't want to ever do it too early because then if an Uber waits for you, they get mad at you. They give you a low rating. So here I am, very careful about Uber. Have to go to the airport, 6:45. I wait. I get to the Uber app, and it says no cars. No cars. There must be something wrong with the Uber app. So I closed it out, restarted it, came back. Again, remember, Midtown, the heart of just the center of Atlanta in the morning on a Tuesday morning where there should be lots of Ubers right around and have been over and over again, probably 100 times in the past. Well, no Ubers. Now, then I restarted it again and it said, well, yeah, there's an Uber 30 minutes away. So I've checked all the options. I think it's the SUV, there's Comfort, there's UberX. There's only one of them even had an Uber. And whatever one it was 30 minutes out. Wow. I'm thinking, wait a minute, the economy is back, traffic is back, hotels are back. NBA All-Star Weekend not long ago. The places, the city's kind of reopening its hop. We've been talking about reopening here on Money Matters for weeks now. Well, where is everybody? Where's the Ubers? Finally get an Uber. 30 minutes later. So of course I'm in a rush now thinking, wait a minute, I've got to get to the airport. And I said, wait, thank you so much, A, for picking me up, and B, where is everybody? Where are all the Ubers? Well, he laughed and he said, well, my friends, they're taking off right now. We've got there's so much money out there, Wes. There's the stimulus checks, they're $1,400. There are folks that are the unemployment rate. Remember when we had unemployment checks that were so large that there was an incentive not to work? And one of the most immutable laws of economics, and I've talked to many a morning with Eric von Hessler about this, is that people respond to incentives. Companies, businesses, governments, we all respond to incentives. So if we have an economic incentive that is $750 a week to not work, That in itself is an incentive. It's an incentive, actually, for some folks, and not everyone. And this isn't the case for everybody, but according to now two separate Uber rides this past week, I heard the exact same story from two different folks that said, yeah, hey, a lot of my friends are just not working right now. They're just not working because everybody has so much money, you almost don't even need to work. Huh. Maybe that's the reasoning. Maybe the $2 trillion that we just got on top of almost a trillion, on top of another $2 trillion because of the pandemic and because of all this government stimulus, maybe, and I don't think it's a maybe, I think it's clearly, there are parts of this economy that are impacted with such a cash flow, such a money drop, that it makes it so that people don't really need to work right now. Or at least they feel as though they don't need to work. And it could be in the restaurant industry, the security industry, the car dealerships, Ubers, you name it. Now, all of a sudden, we've got so much money in the system that if people respond to incentives, number one, immutable law of economics, incentive here, it may be to not work. $500 to not work, $750 not to work. I can see how people are responding to those incentives. Now, I said we'd break this down by individual checks or individual cash flow. The CARES Act, remember, was the $1,200 check. That was the $1,200 check back in a year ago, essentially a year ago from now, or a year ago today. And then the next one that came in December, the December individual check was $600. And then the new Biden plan that just got passed, that, again, government Venmo directly to your account that just started this past week, is $1,400. So we had $1,200 checks, then we had $600 checks, now we have $1,400 checks recurring going out. Now, that might not sound all that different, but when you start adding up the next layer we're going to discuss as soon as we come back from break, are what about for dependents? Well, that's where this last stimulus round gets dramatically, dramatically different, because the economic and stimulus checks per dependent in a family start to add up to very real money. I don't care what income level you are. The overall family checks and this stimulus have gotten to be, quite frankly, staggering. And maybe everyone's just saying, hey, let's go on vacation for a couple of weeks. We have so much money. We're going to talk about those numbers when Money Matters returns. Stay tuned. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. We're talking about what does it mean for an individual family. We talked about how today the business owners are having trouble hiring folks in many different sectors of the economy. It's hard to find workers to fill the jobs, even though we have 9 million, almost 10 million people still not back to those jobs, still haven't come back from what were lost during the beginning of the pandemic. So what's the disconnect? Maybe, of course, part of this, the answer is stimulus, because we have checks going out. $1.9 trillion, what does that really mean to the individual family? Well, let's go back and compare the different stimulus checks. CARES Act was $1,200. Then we had another $600 in December of last year that rolled into families' bank accounts at the end of last year and the beginning of this year. So not long ago. We were only in March. The second stimulus really came in end of December, early January. Now, the brand new stimulus that started hitting people's bank accounts last week, $1,400 per person. But here's the difference. The brand new stimulus plan also gives $1,400 to each dependent in the family. So now, think of it this way. Let's look at this as a family of four. Well, family of four, husband, wife, two dependents, is getting $5,600 in checks. Just hit this week. I think there was a day, there was a record day, something this week. It was $249 billion in a day went out directly to individuals. It was so far the biggest money drop of any given day in economic history. So the average American family just got, and this is 85 to 90% of American families qualify for this check, $5,600 tax-free. That's the equivalent to a $7,500 bonus. $7,500 bonus to 100 million plus families. Well, right now, people are saying, gosh, they feel pretty good. There's a lot of economic security right now, at least for the time being. Savings rates in the U.S. are higher than they've really ever been in economic history. So it has a lot of implications. When we get back, but wait, there's more. There's actually more individual stimulus coming to families that we haven't even talked about. And we're going to talk about that when Money Matters returns. Straight ahead, you're listening to 95.5 WSB Atlanta's News and Talk. Well, good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning from 9 to 11 to take your calls, your questions, and understand the world that is impacting our journey towards retirement. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Also in the studio, 800-972-8255 with pretty much any question you can think of. We're here on a Sunday morning to kind of just give you a objective third-party answer on which direction might be the best answer for you. We know that when it comes to figuring out investment and financial planning, there's no perfect right answer. It's not, it's really almost never. It's very rarely just black and white. You have to do this. You have to do that. It's, wow, we could do this. We could go this direction. We could take left or right. What are the considerations to do both? Do I pay off the whole mortgage or wait? Do I get rid of this life insurance policy or do I keep paying on it? Well, it depends, right? Do I take a lump sum from offered from my employer? Hey, my employer's saying, hey, might be a good time to go. They're giving you some sort of incentive. They're giving you a lump sum. Do you take the big chunk of money or the quote guaranteed monthly amount for the rest of your life? Lump sum versus a pension, which is a better call. What do you do with your 401k? Do you leave it at the old employer? Do you leave it at two old employers? Do you roll it into an IRA somewhere? Reinvest it another way? Do you convert a Roth account from, do you convert a regular IRA into a Roth so that there it's tax-free in the future? Sounds like a great idea. Wait, maybe it isn't. So many of the different financial questions that we face, they're not perfectly black and white and in a given situation. And we've been through an awful lot of them here on Money Matters for way well over a decade here on Sunday mornings. We're happy to do that as well. So good morning. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning and happy to take your questions as you drive around the city that is back up and running and we see traffic and we see the world reopening. And that great reopening has been leading to a great rotation in stocks, in the stock market, because we've seen the same stocks that did amazingly well during the pandemic not do so well this year. And the stocks that didn't do so well last year, the more traditional dividend-paying value-oriented companies have had a really good 2021, and that great rotation seems to, we'll see if it continues. So the number in the studio again, 404-872-0750. Here in Atlanta or outside of Atlanta, 800-WSB-TALK is 800-972-8255. We're getting back to the direct stimulus for families. Huge headline numbers. They're all in the billions and trillions, and it's hard to even wrap your arms around a stack of money that goes from here to the moon and back and here to the moon and back. What does it mean to the average family? Well, we just talked about how this particular round of stimulus for a family of four is $5,600, $7,500, be the equivalent of your employer saying, here's $7,500. Here's a check, $7,500. Now you're going to pay tax on that. You would have net out about $5,600 on average. That's the tax. That's what it ends up being tax-free because remember the stimulus here today is tax-free. $5,600 is real money. $5,600 is real money. I don't care what your income level is. And that is part of what's impacting this economy today. Interesting, if you look at retail and food services. So just the retail industry and food service. Go back to the first CARES Act. We went from a negative 15% as the world shut down. As soon as the stimulus hit, we went from negative 15% in retail and food services to positive 20%. It was a 35, almost 40% surge. Then it kind of leveled off back to kind of a flat line. Then we got to December, January of this year when we had the second round of stimulus. It had surged from negative 3% all the way up to positive 8%. Well, right now we're kind of back at a baseline. We're going to see retail and food services absolutely surge and go through the roof because all of a sudden people have lots of money in their banking account or they're in their checking account, their bank accounts all across the United States. So that's for a family of four. The first stimulus check for a family of four was about $3,400. That was the $1,200 checks, $500 for dependents. The second big stimulus was $600 checks and $600 for dependents. This round, $1,400 for mom and $1,400 for dad and $1,400 for little Johnny and little Susie, family of four together, $5,600. So this round is roughly the size of the last two combined. Plus, we have a savings rate north of 20% already. Plus, let's think about reopening for a second. Approximately, we're getting towards 50% of the entire U.S. population, some level of immunity from COVID-19. That's through prior infection and through vaccines together. But wait, there's more. So there's another, by the way, there's another four. So on top of all of that, Wes, that's enough. Can you stop talking about economic stimulus? Well, not just yet. There's another $400 billion going directly to families. So again, we just talked about the direct payments, but then also there's $400 extra per week for unemployment insurance, and that goes all the way to September. So it's unemployment plus an extra $400 per week. How about this? The child tax credit. Now that child tax credit is $3,000 per child, $3,600 per child if the kids are under the age of six. So again, just a real, to me, it's unfathomable to think about trillions and trillions and trillions. It's a lot easier to understand what's happening in this economy when you say, okay. Everyone's getting, a normal American family is getting almost $6,000 tax-free. That moves behavior. Maybe take a week off. Maybe we don't go look for, maybe take a vacation. No wonder business owners all over the nation, from Pittsburgh to Atlanta to Dallas to Denver to Sacramento, California, having trouble finding people to fill jobs. Empty jobs waiting to be filled. Not enough people to apply. And that's the world we live in right now. People respond to incentives. And that may be why, and we'll see how long they last. Maybe it's only the next couple of weeks. Maybe this is a really short-term phenomenon. People are flush with cash and they've had a tough year and I can't blame people for this. Hey, honey, let's go on vacation. Let's just take off for a week and then we'll come back and we'll go back to work. Maybe we take off the next 2 weeks. And maybe that's part of what's happening in the United States. By the way, TSA screening data just hit a post-pandemic high as well. Mobility in the United States hit a post-pandemic high this week. People are out and about. The world is reopening. And again, it's leading to this great rotation when it comes to the kind of companies that are doing well. We'll get to that. But what about, so what are all the, what are the economic implications? Well, one of them, as the economy gets better and stronger, typically you see higher and higher interest rates. And the Federal Reserve is there navigating this vehicle as it is steadily on this economic journey. And the job of the Federal Reserve is to keep the car going, just steadily moving forward. You don't want it speeding ahead, and you don't want it going in reverse. So the Federal Reserve is there to say, look, let's just make sure that we have these two really important mandates. And their mandates, and they've been this way for a very long period of time, steady, or price stability. So they want inflation to be in check, and maximum jobs, maximum amount of sustainable jobs. That's what the Federal Reserve is really looking at. That's their mandate. And what's interesting about this is that here we are, and again, this was prompted by a conversation we had this week on EVH, the Von Hessler Doctrine this week, asking this question, well, where's all the, so interest rates are going up, all this money's flooding into the system, families are getting checks for $5,600, where's all the inflation? I thought inflation would be through the roof. How did Jerome Powell this week from the Federal Reserve sit down and say, well, we're going to keep rates really low, and we're going to do that for this year and probably the next year and maybe even the next year after that. So what they're saying is that we're keeping our foot on the accelerator, not the brake, right? To raise interest rates as they put the foot on the brake, keeping rates at virtually zero short-term interest rates, that's like keeping your foot on the accelerator. This week, Jerome Powell said, look, rates are going to stay low. Well, the Fed has blinders on. Whether this is right or wrong, this is what the Fed has blinders when it comes to their mandate. They have a dual mandate. It's very simple. Price stability, maximum sustained employment. That's what the Fed does. Put pretty simply, they want to monitor inflation and jobs. That's it. Inflation, steady. Jobs, maxed out. And when inflation is still low and the unemployment rate is still high where we are today, their playbook, they go to their playbook and they say, okay, what are we supposed to do here? Up, low rates, easy money. And that is what the economic data still is pointing towards. And right now, the unemployment rate's still over 6%. We're still at 6.2%. That's high. And in the latest inflation data, core CPI, consumer price index, is still low. It's only 1.2%. It's hard to wrap your arms around that. How can that be? Well, let's go through where inflation really, how do you calculate it? Well, it's eight main economic areas. And it's all the things you can think of. But what's, I think, hard to wrap your arms around is the weightings. What the government, the BLS, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and the U.S. economic data, they look at it. They have a formula that still really hasn't changed a lot. And it's, here are the big three. Housing, transportation, food, and beverage. That's what moves the meter. Medical care, not a big number as far as the percentage weight in this basket. So think of it as a basket of eight different big areas of the economy. But the big weightings are housing, transportation, food, and beverage. Medical care, only 9%. Education, communication, 7%. Recreation, only 6%. Other goods and services, 3%. Apparel, 3%. And if you look down the list on the latest inflation report, you have the big weights, housing, 42% of all CPI, housing only came in at a positive 1.8%. That's why we're seeing overall inflation stay really low. Housing is number one. It's the big kahuna when it comes to calculating inflation. Number two, transportation, 0.6. So barely any inflation whatsoever in transportation, which makes sense. The housing one doesn't make sense to me because housing prices everywhere we've gone or everywhere you look in the United States, housing prices are through the roof. We have an undersupply of housing. The way that's calculated, though, is something called owner's equivalent rent. So that basket of inflation looks around and says, okay, what does it cost to rent this type of accommodation? Not buy. So what we've seen, even though prices have gone through the roof, rents haven't quite caught up with that. So still rents have been lagging. As far as the Fed is concerned, hey, we don't really have a whole lot of inflation. So the blinders on, the dual mandate, the only thing they care about is price stability, which is inflation, and maximum jobs or employment, which means jobs. As far as they are concerned as of today, still, not a lot of inflation, and a lot of it goes back to the way it's calculated. You and I both know, and we feel and we see inflation. Right now, government just says, not yet. We've got great calls on hold. We're gonna do that as soon as we get back. We'll go to the phones. Again, 404-872-0750. You're listening to Money Matters. I am your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning, 9-11. You can find me at wesmoss.com. Stay tuned. Money Matters and your calls straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. Here on Money Matters, we'll go to the phones, 404-872-0750. Let's start with, gosh, just a lot of great calls. We're going to go right to the phones. David and Marietta, what's going on? How can we help? David, hey there.
Thanks for taking my call. How are you doing today?
Good, man. What's going on?
So I had a question for you. I'm in that area where I'm going to be 60 here this year, and I was reading about an option about moving all of my 401k money from my current employer and doing that and investing it differently, but staying within my 401k program at work, but if you will, swinging for the fences with new money going in. Because right now, even though I'm putting a lot of money in, it feels like I'm filling up an ocean with a pail of water. This is not more effective it's going to be. And I want to know what your thoughts were on doing something like that.
Now, are they, so you're almost, you are 60, correct? Or almost 60?
I will be toward the end of the year.
And are they allowing you, you're saying they're, you're still there and they're allowing you to roll over a portion of it. Is that correct as well?
Yes.
Which
or,
is,
or all of it if I want, yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting. I'm glad you brought that up. It's something that very, nobody ever talks about, but it's a huge, let's call it milestone. A lot of companies, we think of 401k rollovers. We almost exclusively when you leave an employer, right? Almost all, every conversation is about, hey, I left XYZ company. I left Southern company. I left AT&T and I have a 401k. And now thinking about rolling it over. But so many of those same companies allow for rollovers in the form of what's called an in-service rollover. In-service distribution just means that you're still working, and they say, hey, if you want to roll over your 401k into a Schwab IRA or Vanguard IRA, go ahead and do it. Now, you usually can't roll every single penny out. Usually it's something like 95% of it, and then you can still continue to contribute, but you can take money and roll it over. And again, remember, if you do a direct rollover, you don't pay taxes on it.
Right.
But it is a good question of where to go from there. Do you do it? Is there any downside to that? And gosh, David, we need more time on this. So hang on a couple more minutes and we'll come back and we'll answer this question around this 401k in service. Very interesting rollover that we're talking about right here on Money Matters. So stay tuned. You're listening to 95.5 WOSB, Atlanta's News and Talk.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlanta's Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. It's Sunday morning. I'm your host, Wes Moss. You know, the phones are so busy today. We just had a great call with David, and I wanted to answer the end of that question, and then we'll just go right back into the phones. What David had said, by the way, 404-872-0750, David had asked about what's called an in-service rollover. And I don't know if we've ever had that question before. And it's one of these, it's a fairly big part of retirement planning that people are allowed to do that nobody ever talks about. And we always think of rolling over 401k from an old employer after you left. Hey, I've gone from AT&T. I was surplused from AT&T, by the way. Had a couple conversations with AT&T folks this week, and they continue to say, "Well, I'm worried about getting surplused," and I'm thinking again, the greatest disguise of the greatest PR spin of any company in the history of the world on essentially firing people, laying people off. They do it in such mass that they have their own word for it, and it's called surplusing. And I guess if you're a company, it's a great idea. Totally rebrand on what you call firing people or laying people off. Just say, we have a surplus of humans. And in order to cure the surplus of all these people that we have working for us, we need to surplus them. We need to get, what does that mean? Well, it means that we just need to surplus them. Well, what does that exactly mean? Well, it just means that we have to have less of a surplus. Well, good. That doesn't sound that bad. And in real life, what that means is we need to fire a lot of people. We need to get rid of people. Now, they don't just have a bunch of people come in on Monday morning and say, you're fired, which thank goodness for that. They do it in a very polite way. And they kind of just encourage you to, hey, you know, this is a package of retirement that might not be around if there's a surplus in 6 months. So you may want to get out of here today while you still can, while the offer's still on the table, kind of a wink, wink, wink thing. And that's just the way it's been. And I, to some extent, I guess I'd give them a little credit for it's better than just having a bunch of people come in on Monday morning and say, hey, 10,000 people laid off. Right? Remember those headlines during the financial crisis? 22,000 people laid off. So it is better than that. I will give them that credit, but it is amazing to me every time I hear, and it's been going on for so many years, it's almost like it's normal now. It's like, oh, yeah, I don't want to get surplused. So anyway, but we go back to why or when people typically start thinking about, hey, I'm going to roll over this old 401k after I've left my employer. But most big employers will allow you to roll over your 401k now. While you're still, usually when you reach a certain age, and it's a little different for every plan, but usually from what I've seen, once you get to 50 or 55, they say, you can go ahead and take 90% of the 401k, roll it over to an IRA if you don't want to be stuck in an employer plan. And that's what David's question was about. And Ryan Ely and I were just talking about it over the break. And really, it comes down to taking control. And I look at 401k plans all the time for the families I work with, and they're typically very similar. You usually have 7, 8, 9 funds, options, usually a bunch of target date funds. And then you have a couple stock funds and a couple bond funds and usually a money market fund. And that's what you have to choose from. And that's in itself isn't that bad. It's almost like the simple menu sometimes at a restaurant is a great menu. You know, you can go to a place where there's 72 different things on the menu, and they do 75 of those things not all that great. And then sometimes you go to a place that has like, literally, here's what we do here. We do cheeseburgers, hamburgers, and chicken tenders. And we have a specialty. It's a PB&J with bananas. That's what we do here, and it's all good. And those places are great. So sometimes a 401k is kind of like that, where they just have a few options, and they're pretty good, they're low cost, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. However, for David, to answer your question, it's really about as long as you can keep contributing, which again, most every case I've seen of an in-service rollover is that you, let's say you have $500,000 in a 401k, you take 450 of it or 480 of it, roll it into an IRA, leave a little bit in the regular 401k and keep contributing your full amount while you're still working there. And then the 401k, then you invest it how you see fit. And that is it's very much just about control. It is, do you want to control your investments? Do you want to go outside of that menu of 5 to 10 options? And you want to, let's say, maybe buy individual companies or individual ETFs. Maybe you want dividend companies or a certain kind of sector of healthcare, let's say, that you don't, or banks or financials that you don't necessarily have inside the 401k. So there's a much greater level of specificity, customization, of course, in once you perform a rollover and it's your IRA and you can invest it in any way you want. That's the huge difference. And when you're 60, that's really just the decision. Now, if you're 55, one of the considerations that I think the primary consideration is, when are you able to access this money? Remember, at 55 versus 59.5, 59.5 is when you can access your money from an IRA and not pay taxes, not pay a penalty. Of course, you have to pay taxes. But you have to wait to 59.5 in order to not pay a penalty. Do it before that, and you have a 10% penalty on top of the taxes. But in a 401k, if you leave an employer post age 55 and you leave it in the 401k plan, let's say you're 56 or 57, and you didn't leave that employer until age 55 plus, you can now access that money without the 10% penalty. That's a big difference between 401k and an IRA is the age of accessibility as long as you retired post 55 or later in the 401k. So that's an advantage of leaving in the 401k. I think the advantage of moving to an IRA is certainly the customization, taking back control. Again, fees are certainly a consideration. If you have a big, expensive 401k, that bunch of funds that are expensive and not all that great, then yeah, you're probably better off just doing an IRA. But again, I think the time in order to do that really makes is the biggest consideration. We're going to continue to go to the phones here, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Here's a little bit of good news, God forbid. If I'm looking at a chart of the percent of the United States and world population fully vaccinated, and you look at the trajectory of the world versus the United States, right? And the United States got lots of flack. We handled COVID. Everyone handled COVID better than the United States. Well, what's interesting here is that when it comes to the vaccine, we are best in class by far. So we are the United States is besting the rest of the world by far with the vaccine rollout. So if you look at the vaccine rollout, cumulative COVID doses administered per 100 people, the United States is through the roof. And if you look at the trajectory of countries outside of the U.S., it's a very slow grind towards herd immunity that doesn't hit until the first quarter of 2023. Where here's the United States, the trajectory that we're on at this pace, we're at the 70% herd immunity level in Q3 of this year. We're about ready to start quarter two. So this United States rollout has been phenomenally fast. So the EU, it has 10 people per 100 with doses administered for COVID-19 vaccine, 10 out of 100. Finland is about 12, Norway 12, Ireland is 13, Denmark is 15. The United States, we're at 34. We are at 34 doses administered per 100 people. So over a third. So just really phenomenally good progress here in the United States, coming from a country that, as a country, obviously we've been, you know, everybody handled COVID better than we did. I think that's wrong, but I think that at least there's now some proof, at least this is showing up in the media. This is coming from Bloomberg, that shows that we are actually way ahead of the vast, vast, vast majority of the planet. Let's go back to the phones here and see. Let's start with Sean in Tequila. Sean, what's going on? How can I help, man?
Hey, Wes. How you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
I'm good. I'm doing good enough, Sean. I'm doing good enough. What's going on with you, man? How's it going?
I've been listening to you for a long time. This is the first time I'm calling you. I have life insurance since 2015 for me and my wife, and I pay over no return or nothing like that. Just, you know, like that. I pay over like $200 a month. Back then I could afford it, but right now, because of a lot of stuff been going on, I cannot afford it anymore. What should I do?
Well, hold on. So how much is the life? How much is the benefit, the death benefit, if something happens to you?
It's $250 for each one.
$250,000?
Yeah, she's only 41, but I'm 65.
Oh, you're 65. Okay.
Yeah, and I pay 156, and she pays 56. I mean, I pay for both, of course. But I don't know. Right now, I mean, a lot of financial stuff going on with me, and it's too much.
And
if I go down to 100,000, and they lower it down, or just cancel it, or what? I lose all that money that I already paid them.
Well, you're right. Now, just remember, if you do term insurance, the goal is to lose the money and waste the money. Remember, right? You know, right? Yeah. This is not an investment you want to cash in on. This is the worst case scenario you catch in on. So you're hoping you waste the money. Gosh, I'll pay $220 a month, do your term. Hey, I survived, so I never got the insurance money. That's the win we're looking for. Of course, you know that. Now, the question, though, is that you've got a big age disparity between you and your wife. Do you guys have any kids? Do you have any kids?
Yeah, I got two kids.
How old are they?
one of them is autistic also, so she gonna need money if I die or something like that, I'm sure. But
How old are they?
10 and 11.
Oh, man. Okay. And then do you guys have a mortgage on the house? Do you own a house or are you renting a house?
I have two houses. One of them, I just paid it off, but I just bought a new one. I pay $3,000 a month mortgage on this one. I just bought a new car. I pay like $800 a month on this car, too. So, and I've been out of work because of some surgery, and I had COVID recently. I've been in bad shape. So,
well, listen, let's not make actually, hang on one sec. We got to go quick break. This is I do have an answer for you. Let's talk this through. Hang on for just two more minutes. We got weather traffic. We'll be right back with this very important question from Sean from Tequila. Stay tuned. We're going to go right back to Sean in Tequila. Sean, just as a quick reminder, you're still there. You've got the scenario where you're 65 and your wife's 41. It's a big age difference. And then you've got two kids that are 10 and 11, and life insurance is getting expensive. Is it a level premium that's staying the same every month, or is it going up a bunch because you just turned 65?
No, it's same every month.
And it's about $160 for your portion.
It's $159 for mine, and for hers is $57, I think.
And you're going through a rough financial patch, and you had COVID, and you're recovering. Are you going to be able to get back to work, do you think, anytime soon? And if you're not back to work, why aren't you getting the unemployment right now?
No, I am working now.
Oh,
I'm
you
back
are?
To work.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I have some rental properties. Also, I get, rent from them. And right now, I mean, it's just getting every month. I pay like two something every month. I mean, I'll have it till I'm 75. And for her is, I think, 30 years for same price, $57 or something. I don't know if I...
And you have an $800 car payment too. Is that?
I just got a new car, $800 a month. I have to pay for the car, and I just bought a house. But this house is paid for. The one that we're living in, the other one I just bought one. It's kind of brand new, but I'm still fixing it and all that.
Listen, man, I'm just gonna tell you from our conversation here, this is an easy one. Life insurance, particularly for your age disparity between you and your wife, is a long-term solution. So don't ruin a long-term solution with a short-term decision of just not paying it right now. I'm sure from what I can hear, you need to find the $159 a month for now to keep that thing going. I think you've got too much financial wiggle room. You can drop something else that's $159 a month. But for you, my friend, you got to keep paying that life insurance for at least the next 5 years. I think it's a no-brainer to do so. That's my call on this one. I hope that works. All right, you're listening to Money Matters. Stay tuned. More Money Matters, your calls and questions straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. I'm your host, Wes Moss. Take your calls and your questions, and let's just do that. Let's go right to the phones here. A lot of great calls on hold, and I'd love to get to them. 404-872-0750 is the number. Nancy joins us on the line from Lilburn. Nancy, what's going on? How can I help?
Well, I had a safari, and for the past 2 years, it's been canceled. So this time, I decided to take my money out. However, since they canceled the trip, they had to put it back on my American Express card. That's $85,000 on my American Express card. I'm stressed as to what to do or how to get it back.
Whoa, okay, that's interesting. Well, first of all, you just skipped over one of the most, a very interesting point, which was you were going on safari, first of all, and it was canceled in 2020, obviously, because of the pandemic. And it's canceled again this year?
Yes, because it was supposed to be in late May, and I guess they're starting tours again in June.
Oh, man, where were you going? What countries?
And I was taking my whole family.
And they won't roll it into the next month? The May, you get hit with the cutoff, and now you can't roll it into June or July?
No, because I have my granddaughter is getting ready to go to college, and everybody, my son teaches swim lessons in the summertime. I mean, this was the block time that we had, and we can't do it another time this year.
Well, how much do you typically, so obviously this was a huge chunk on the Amex. You paid for it a couple years ago, a year plus ago, and then I suspect obviously you paid the whole thing off. And now are they saying you're just going to have a credit of $85,000 on your Amex?
Yes.
Wow. Do you get to keep the points?
I have not talked to American Express yet. I wanted to talk to you to see how I should intelligently talk to them.
Wow. I have to say, this is a great Clark Howard question. I think this is probably even better for Clark. I'm going to ask Clark on this one, too, because he's the credit card expert. The points, the points. I would tell you that. Well, first of all, let me just ask you logistically, if you've got what do you typically spend in a given year through Amex or a given month normally?
Maybe 30,000.
Oh, per month or year?
Year.
Oh, per year. Wow. So really, this is multiple years worth of spending all in one refund that you're going to get.
Correct.
Man, I don't know if I've ever heard a problem this big, because if you think about it, when you're spending something this big, it's not something that is going to get canceled because it's like a wedding or some sort of huge event. But here we are in the world of post-pandemic life, and we're still seeing these huge cancellations. And this is a really, really good one. Can you utilize – well, let me ask you this. So realistically, it doesn't make sense for you to just work this money off over the next, let's say, 6 months, because this is multiple years worth of spending. So that doesn't make any sense. My question would be, though, do you foresee another big trip, though? That you would be putting on the Amex. I remember a call from a couple of years ago. I actually wrote an article in the AJC about it. I think I titled the article something like Round the World Robin, because she was doing a big round the world National Geographic trip on an airplane.
That was me.
Oh, that was you. You're Round the World Robin?
I am.
You got to be kidding me.
No.
So wait, the same trip that we talked about 2 years ago, this is the trip?
No, this is a separate trip. That was just my husband and I for our 50th.
No, when we talked a couple years ago, I remember you were going to do a round the world trip and then you were going to do a safari. This is the safari?
Yes.
And the safari got canceled?
Twice.
You got to be kidding me. I God bless you. And I know your name's not Robin, but I named you Round the World Robin because I think it made sense. So the very safari that I was so excited about you going on with your family, we talked about how to pay for it. We talked about how we don't want to take money out of your IRA for it. We don't want to sell stocks that have huge gains for it. And here you are putting it on Amex. Who would have ever thought 2.5 or 3 years ago that you would have gotten an $85,000 credit and now you can't work it off because you don't even spend that much money? Listen, I'm going to ask Clark what he says about this. Now, he might tell you something differently, but I think logically my answer is that that's going to sit there for a little while, because knowing you, and I can only say this now because I know you, we've talked before, you're going to come up with another big trip. I think that if anybody that can figure out a great trip, and you're an example, you got to remember, your story is an inspiration to people, because what it shows is that happy retirees are able to figure out a way to do these big trips. You can afford these big trips. They're worth it. They're with your family. You can look forward to it. I think the answer, just the practical answer here, is that you're going to find another trip And it's not going to be a trip that's going to be a long time from now. I think that you're going to find a trip that you're going to spend this amount of money on. May not be this month or over the next month or two, but I bet you in the next 6 to 12 months, you're going to figure out another trip to replace that, because why wouldn't you? Right?
Well, that is true. I was just thinking, though, that, well, I'd like to buy a new car, and I also would like to buy a different boat, but I don't think they're going to be able to take that much money on American Express.
Sure they will. Absolutely they will. Sure, yeah. I mean, remember, American Express is famous for no limit. And here they are, you're going to have an $85,000 credit. You're going to have an inverse balance, right? You're going to have an $85,000 surplus on your Amex. Now, you might have to call them. You might have to say, hey, I'm buying, I don't know, a boat. And the boat's going to be 70 grand. And normally that transaction wouldn't go through. But you're going to have to just work with them and say, look, I've got a big purchase coming up. I want to, and I've got this $85,000 credit, for goodness sakes. You're going to have to speak to the highest level manager that you can speak to, because that's not a problem that they probably see every day. Not a whole lot of $85,000 safaris have been canceled and credited. It's not like you bought, you bought a pair of shoes from Zapatos and you got a $57 credit and, I don't think so. Now, here's the other thought, is that we've been getting some calls as we're talking through this, and we've got a couple different folks that said, look, Amex are just going to send you a check. Amex, if you ask them to, Amex will probably just send you a check to do this. Once you call them, you're going to probably have to speak to a manager of a manager of a manager, because it's a pretty unique problem. But I think in this case, Amex will probably just send you a check. However, I would think for just a minute, because you are our friend of Money Matters, Round the World Robin, I bet you've got another trip in you. So think about that for this weekend and figure out, maybe you're going to go somewhere else creative with the family. By the way, how was the Round the World trip? Did you got that in before COVID?
No, we have not done that yet, because I checked on it. And it seemed like you were traveling almost every day, and I'm 78, and I like to be able to rest maybe a day or two. So most of them seemed pretty strenuous.
Maybe just too much, yeah. Well, again, it looks like, I believe you could probably just get a check back when you call. You can call Amex, say, look, that's too big of a surplus in my account, or a positive balance. Maybe just send me a check. I think that's probably the answer. But you may also think to yourself, hey, we need to go somewhere else, and you're going to be able to pay for it for Amex. And by the way, a lot, you can do these really big purchases through Amex. Obviously you did the $85,000. I believe you can do this for other items. Of course you can do it for other items as well. So Nancy, thank you for the call. God bless you. Keep traveling, stay young. And thank you for your contribution to Money Matters. That's so awesome. but it's great in one respect, and it's also so telling of what's happened this past year, right? So think about, the list of cancellations just is so much longer than the list of initiations. And it's got real, these are real things that are happening to families around the world, just real experiences that haven't happened because of COVID. Real trips, real weddings, real graduations. People have missed them over and over and over again. And I think this is a really good example of that. And, you know, I really like the article. I don't know if I talked about this last week or not, but there was an article in the Wall Street Journal that basically said, this is a doctor. I did talk about this, but I'm in this camp. Dr. Mercari, I believe, from Johns Hopkins, professor of medicine at Johns Hopkins, essentially said, get your vaccine, wait a month, go back to normal. Get your vaccine, wait a month, go back to normal. So that Round the World Robin, she should be able to go anywhere now in the world again. And yet, there is not a day that goes by that there's not another article that is trying to tell you that you really can't. You shouldn't. The variants and this and that. And that you, we don't know exactly how well the vaccine works. And you should not go back. So there's just going to continue to be this tug of war between the CDC, which, by the way, just yet another change, right? So it was no, you didn't need a mask, and then you needed a mask, and now you need, and then you need two masks, and now you need, then you needed 6 feet, and now you need 3 feet in schools. So the arbiter, quote in quotes, of what we're supposed to do during a pandemic has just been all over the map. All over the map. And again, I know it's difficult for them because it's novel and it's new, and I get it. It's difficult. They are learning as they go. But I think a lot of Americans are back in the camp of we've got to live our lives and go back to not living and being influenced by fear and paralyzed by and paralysis by a media that will forever be enchanted by scaring you and keeping you nervous and keeping you essentially in the grip of fear. That is their job. The most of the media, and hopefully it's not this show and hopefully it's not WSB, but most of the media is 100% in the fear business. Like, that is their job, is to scare you as much as humanly possible. And that they love to do it, and they're just going to continue to do it, and they're going to continue to try to put the brakes on you returning back to normal life. And I get all the sacrifices that we've made, and we've all made them for so long. And so much of the world and media particularly is still grasping at keeping the paralysis of fear for as many people as they can. And that's why I try to bring here on Money Matters doctors from Hopkins that are using common sense and the medical background to say, hey, everybody, listen, in the end, get your vaccine, wait a month, go back to normal. That's the advice that I look at. Again, maybe right, maybe wrong. But that to me resonates, and that's the direction I'm headed here in the U.S. So you're listening to Money Matters. Stay tuned. More Money Matters straight ahead. Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. It's Sunday morning. Really, I think next week we'll look in depth to this parallel between what was happening back in the 40s and 50s relative to today, right? World War II, we're always looking for some sort of analog to compare and learn from so that we have at least some semblance of a roadmap as we move forward. And it's really the aftermath or the world, what happened during World War II with so many, let's call millions of Americans off at war and in the war effort. We had deficit spending to finance the war. Then after we emerged from the war with great human casualty and lives, we came back with a big deficit and Americans kind of getting life back to normal, which obviously took a little while to happen. What the Federal Reserve did back then with interest rates is really similar to what they're doing today. The budget deficit was really similar to what we have today. And I think we can learn from that and see what, and markets ultimately did well. If you look at after the war, so if you look at 1947 and 48, 49, 50, the markets actually did, the S&P 500 did well. The first couple of years were not amazingly strong, but they were positive. And I think that next weekend, what we can do is kind of dive into some of those numbers and just see if we're going to get some sort of parallel between then and today. Give us a little bit of roadmap. We've seen the great reopening. It's underway. That great reopening of the American economy has led to a great rotation. So the same group of stocks, let's call it the 5 to 8 stocks that were really driving the bus, were all technology and digital everything last year that did really, really well, have really lagged this year. And more traditional, we call them retro economy stocks, called pre-COVID 2019 economy stocks, have done, had a really good rebound this year as they're continuing to play catch up. So great rotation, the great reopening has continued to lead to this great rotation in markets. which we'll continue to keep a keen eye on right here on Money Matters. You can find me and the team at WesMoss.com, WESMOSS.com. Those emails come straight to me and the team. We'll get back to you within 48 hours. Have a wonderful rest of your Sunday.